Okay, are we ready to break into our questions so we can get started?
Okay, so I have the first one here as I get myself sorted. We had one question I wanted to pull up here, and it was a question we had that was, when should you invest in growth versus protecting your cash flow?
So that's a great question, because last call, the Deep Teach was all about financial control and projection. And, you know, when should you invest in growing the business versus when should you be saving the money? Because sometimes you can't do the same thing at the same time because they're two different things. But for owners, this is one of the hardest things to answer, because it really depends on where your business is today. And the mistake is thinking that growth and cash flow are the opposite, but they're not. You know, healthy growth should eventually create cash flow, but you have to ask yourself, what's the problem? Are you short on cash, right? Or are you not able to grow? So before you say, should I be investing in growth? I want you to ask yourself, is the problem a cash problem or is the problem a growth problem? Because they're two different things. So if you don't have enough work, enough, you know, jobs to fill the schedule, then you have a growth problem. But if you have plenty of work, but you can't pay your bills or you're struggling to pay the bills, you have a cash flow problem. So a lot of times to solve the cash flow problem, you need more sales. And when the real issue is like the real issue could either be pricing, the jobs aren't priced properly. The other real issue could be maybe your pay is off, like your margins aren't great because you're paying too much to the employees, or it's operational inefficiencies.
Yeah.
Right. Do you know how long it's taking you to do each job? Are you pricing them? Not just your hourly price is right, but you're pricing the job right. Those are two different things.
Yeah.
You know, maybe for us, we clean faster than we actually quote the job for, and we never readjusted our cleaning efficiency and we just left it at that. So we always overprice the job on how long it really takes us to clean.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question here. I'll play devil's advocate for a bit. So protecting the cash flow is about making sure that the right amount of money is coming in, right?
Yes.
And we kind of have that locked in. But then there's growth mode, which is really kind of dumping it into, basically it's you're spending future money or future ROI.
Yeah.
And
it's taking a risk to know that it's your CAC payback, yeah. Right? How fast can I get my money back?
Yep. And so for protecting cash flow and figuring out where that balance is, like when should I push? When should I hit it? And if I feel like I'm tight right now, or if I feel like I'm not growing, because I guess the feeling that we get is that I'm stuck, or the answer is like, I'm not growing. And so the default is, let our dog barking.
That's our dog.
If I feel stuck, and my immediate reaction is I want to push for growth. I want to just dump money into marketing and let's just get out of the hole. How do you work through that in terms of like just dumping the money versus what are at least the checkpoints that we should look at for like, what numbers would be right to look at?
So they always talk about your CAC payback. How fast, if I put, $1,000 out in marketing and just say I put it on my credit card, how fast can I get it back is one thing. And looking at how fast you can get it back, because if you're doing reoccurring services, whether it's, residential or commercial, they're like mini ATM machines. Like they just put out consistent money on a cadence. It's how fast can you get it back? But it's also looking at what's your CAC payback? What's your close rate? And I love this one. Can you even staff the demand? So many people are trying to grow, but they're short staffed. And so if you can't staff the demand or hire fast enough, so it's CAC payback, it's your close rate, it's your cost per lead, which is kind of that CAC payback segment. But also, can I hire and train, onboard enough cleaners to keep up with the growth? Or then am I going to in 2 weeks be in a deficit on a 3 week wait list?
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. Cause you just touched on, you used to talk about it as the three pillars, the profit, which was one is the revenue potential, which is the people.
Yes.
And being available to take new money in. And then there's the closing, which is actually getting the money.
Getting money.
And then the CAC payback is how quickly can I recover money that I put out there.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the one is that this, the hardest is not necessarily your CAC payback. It's not necessarily your close rate. We all know what a decent close rate looks like or what it should be. We all have been in business long enough. I think the hardest one out of all of them is the staffing, because if I hire four people and only one stays, but I trained all four, that is also a cost of training, and then the turnover, and then, you know, you're out of trainers, but I need to hire four more.
I'm laughing because I see Rico over here. He's like,
yeah,
nodding his head.
And, you know, can you train them and onboard them, or how long does that drag out as well? What did we call it the other day? We were talking about it. It's because there's the CAC payback for marketing, but I said it was like the applicant side of CAC payback is figuring how much does it cost you to get a hire, train that hire, onboard that hire, and get them ready. What's the time and the cost? Because that has to match your marketing if you're going to grow. Because if not, you're either spending all this money on hiring and recruiting and then you don't have enough jobs, or you're spending all this money on marketing and you don't have enough people.
Right. And so, like with the CAC payback, what that's based on is time to realize revenue, which is the amount of time it takes for you to get that money back. But for the employees and the applicants is time to realize revenue potential, is how quickly can I have something available to soak in that new money, to keep that new money with us.
Yeah, this is probably the hardest part of business, is spinning both of those at the same time, or the balance of both of those at the same time. And so many people have taught us, and actually asked this question to a marketing professional because I wanted their answer. So many people have taught us, do not turn off your marketing, don't reduce your marketing. And I actually asked a marketing professional this question, and they said, absolutely turn it down, but don't turn it off. Turning it down won't affect it as, and it'll help you save money during that downtime or put that money over to hiring. And so it's consistently adjusting based off of your need versus I'm always spending $5,000 a month on marketing, but why am I spending this on marketing if I'm understaffed? And most of the people tell me, oh, well, my mentor or a coach told me not to turn it down. Ask your marketing professional, is this true? Or can I turn it down without affecting the impact too much and go put an extra $1,000 on recruiting?
Yeah.
And they said, absolutely, you can. They just don't recommend turning it off. So it's turning it down and turning it off are two different things.
Yeah. And I will say this here, at least for a shotgun approach to understanding total revenue, recruitment cost versus marketing cost, is recruitment costs are typically about 20% of the amount that you'd be pushing on marketing. So if marketing, you typically spend about 5% for stability, 7% for growth, and then like 8-10 whatever for pushing it hard. 20%.
20% of that.
20% of your marketing budget is additional budget, not together, but additional budget. So if you spend 5% in marketing, typically that's in growth mode. I'm sorry, in stability, when you're kind of at pace, 1% in recruitment costs per total revenue.
To keep up. And if I'm spending 10% on marketing of my total revenue,
yeah,
then how much do I want to spend on my recruiting?
Right. And so that's about 2%.
2%.
Yeah. This is when you're starting to kind of tip over the scale of about $1 million. Because below that, it starts to get a little bit more aggressive and you put more money in because, again, you're trying to get out of the hump. And so I just wanted to give you that shotgun approach. It's not perfect for everybody because, again, it all depends on culture. It all depends on how locked in.
If you live in an urban area versus more of a rural area, that can affect it as well. But this is a general good, like, rule of thumb.
Yeah. It's the people variable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love. That was a good question. And I think it's, you know, do you have enough work? If the answer is no, then you have a growth problem. If you have enough work, but not enough money, the answer is a cash flow problem. But if we want to go into that growth, can you sustain the growth? Or if you can't, then you're just throwing the money into an inferno and burning it. Like if you're in growth mode, but you can't staff it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. And it really depends on the level of risk you're willing to take. We did this great exercise in the One Layer Deep and Woot Recruit company on Friday. This is a total sidebar. We did this exercise and we asked every single person, and there were 35 of us, I think, in the company.
Yeah.
They had to exactly say it. It's, what can I run really fucking fast at? What am I great at? And what do I suck at? So we had every single person tell us that, all 35 people. And why this is important is because one of the things I had to come up with, what was I great at? What can I do really, you know, freaking fast, was I can take a risk. That's like my superpower. I can take a risk like nobody's business. And You know, are you willing to take the risk to grow, right? Get in growth mode. And it is, it's kind of that risk of, if I put this in, will I get it out in time?
Yeah. And I will say, just side note, is that when they had to say those, is it's not just a general, oh, it's this, or it might be that specifically you had to start it. Otherwise you had to restart, is what I suck at is dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. And it was really interesting to see, Rico was on that call with us. How did you feel about that exercise, Rico?
I think it gave me a clearer sense of self during that meeting. It felt comfortable. I guess when somebody asks you those questions, you'd feel like you have the tendency, or you have more clarity to know yourself further. It kind of felt good to admit, you know, the things you're really good at and the things that you suck at. It gives you that confidence instead of, you know, having just a good to know memory out of yourself.
It's laying the cards out on the table. It's full transparency.
And I thought it was a great exercise because we had some of our staff members say that, like, they hate talking on the phone, and that was part of their job. But we want to know those things. But it felt great that they were confident enough to say that, oh, I really hate talking on the phone. And I'm like, we're going to have to reevaluate your position there.
Yeah.
You know, joking, but it was great because I think one of the lessons that I've learned here lately, Rico, is, and this is a hiring topic, is people can be repositioned and be extremely successful in a repositioning. You know, we had a VS and he was onboarding a new VS, and they had been let go of another company and they were selected by another company. And the same thing happened, like with Ryan, one of our VSs was let go and picked up by another person, and they absolutely love him. Like he's phenomenal.
He's dominating in the role that he's playing.
And it's just interesting to see that just because someone doesn't work somewhere doesn't mean they won't work for someone else in the same position. So even when we're hiring our cleaning technicians, we have to keep that in mind. It couldn't be the actual job. Most likely it's your company or your culture is a misalignment, not the actual job. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I can double down on that one, Libby, I guess with tons of people I've helped out with the VS program, I see Tiffany, I see Lucy here as well, Allison too. What I found important, really important when hiring a VS or when endorsing a VS, would be really the personality of, you know, of each person's. If these people would fit, you know, it won't be really much of a problem in the long run, because there's repositioning every time. If you really like them to be part of your team, if you feel like they have a potential to kind of grow a certain area in your department, if they're not pushing down on, or if they're not nailing, you know, what they're currently doing, there's always opportunity to have them grow into another area where they have more potential to go at it. I guess I could say myself as an example, if that's okay, Libby, because right before I started as a head of our VS program, I initially worked as an account manager. And let me tell you, there were some areas where I sucked at it, especially in terms of negotiations. I can admit, I can only help with the recruitment side of it. But when it comes to like the numbers, and Libby and Chris knows about this, I've been openly honest about them. I suck at numbers. But then when I had to be repositioned, I had, you know, there was an opportunity that Libby had in mind with the VS program. I told her, yeah, you know, it's more on the recruitment side of things. It's more on me knowing what the clients need or what a customer needs and what a VS, you know, can contribute as well. And that was, I would say, my strong suit. It's all about repositioning where the person that you hire that you like to work with would fit in the most, rather than what they're really good at and pushing yourself downwards, pushing them down into what you think they need to do for you.
And it's a good topic, because the first thing that most people are going to think, well, I can't just reposition someone, right? Because that could cost money. Maybe I don't need that position yet. But Chris, what have I done? I did it to Rico. I did it to Chris. I've done it to Marilyn. I've done it to Miguel. I've done it to a ton of our staff. What do I do to you guys if you want to be repositioned and you're really good at something, but we don't need that something yet full time?
Proof of concept.
I actually tell them, like, hey, I just need you to stay here. I know you don't like it. You may not be good at it, but if you do this and get us to here, then I can have you do this full time. Then you can, you know, do the thing you love more often, right? We did it to Alfredo. And we constantly are saying, hey, like, once we get to here, I will let you do this, then you can be full-time in this department. So they're helping you get there. But in return, they get to get kind of what they want and get out of that position they don't like. And that also contributes to your growth.
And that's a way to get some really heavy investment to people who may not have been invested to begin with that. This is I think it's chapter 10, right? Future frame. That's the focus. What they're currently good at right now, how they're contributing and how they're pushing hard. I'm looking at my dog here.
Dog issues.
So we had
go ahead. We had a question.
Yeah. We had a couple of questions here and I want to jump onto it real quick. It was Michelle asked how much money should you be keeping in your business account? And if there's excess, where can you put that to make it work for you instead of sitting there? So it's kind of a two part, because I think it's also about cash reserve, but also about future money reallocating profit.
Yeah, we talked about this in, I think, the first OS1 call in June, was how much money is enough money to get your cash reserve like saved up. And that depends on everybody. There is no magic answer. In the olden days, we heard a lot of like mentors and coaches recommend like 3 months worth. And that has recently changed and kind of compressed as you like read more, like listen to maybe some other coaches or other people, read different articles. And that has kind of changed, because I also think the accessibility to these crazy loans also are so much faster.
Oh my goodness.
Are so much faster, and I don't recommend any of them. But I also think it's compressed a little bit, and it's what you're comfortable with. It's what are you comfortable with? I've heard everyone say from 1 month's payroll to 3 months' payroll to 6 months' payroll. It depends, again, on the level of risk that you're willing to take.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also contribute to, you know, so I always have the statement, right? I'm cash poor and asset rich. I follow like the Elon Musk, where he says he doesn't really have cash in the bank because it's all in assets or equity, or investments in businesses. And so it also depends on, you know, how much risk are you willing to take versus how much money do you have put in other businesses, and how many streams of revenue do you have coming in as well if something does happen?
Yeah.
Because believe me, I've had one of my businesses save another business before, during Hurricane Ian. WooRecruit saved Organize It, hands down. And then that's when we decided to open the other location, was I didn't want all my eggs in this basket with the potential of a hurricane hitting me every 3 to 5 years. And then we opened the other location. And so, but to open that location, I had to use my cash reserve. And that was the risk I was willing to take to open another location, because it's extremely expensive.
Yeah, but it was there for the purpose of the reserve.
It was there for the purpose of the reserve, and then you have to replenish it. And so you can use that reserve for rainy days, for when hurricanes hit, tornadoes, disasters, COVID. You just have to ask yourself, how much am I comfortable with having in that reserve? So I don't have the perfect answer for you. All I know is that you can use it for growth and investments, but you have to have a plan of, if I take it out, how do I put it back? The rule is more important than the money, right? So that's my biggest suggestion.
Yeah.
Have your rules. I talked about this on the monthly deep teach. We have a rule and Organize It. I don't even have a card. I can't even spend the money if I wanted to. And so that's one of my rules. Why? Because I would spend the money probably. and so I don't have a card. I don't need a card. I don't do any purchases. I don't do anything with it. The card stays with my ops manager, my office manager. That's one of our rules. And if I need to spend money, I have to ask. And I said, that was a rule. And somebody goes, well, what if I'm the only person? I said, well, if you trust yourself, and if you don't, get a peer or a spouse, or someone that you can run, have that filter through. So, because when you take money out of the reserve or even to spend it, have the rules, because the rules, again, are more important than the money.
Good. I wanted to touch real quick back to our previous conversation, just highlight, Nicole had mentioned-
you like that about kettlebell?
Oh, believe me, that's, yeah. There's a lot of history behind why that's there. We've talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
With our micro workouts.
So you got to trip over it literally to get anywhere.
Yeah. It's my unbreakable rule. My impossible truth, as I say. You're dumb if you don't work out, because it's literally right there. Yeah. But Nicole, she had mentioned, I see her laughing. This is what I tell my sales team regarding the hiring perspective. for the team as we scale, one new hire is 40 hours of new work needed. I like that. To keep it manageable, I'm pacing this at one new hire per week. Sales team, we need a steady 40 hours locked in each person within 2 weeks of their start date. So I like that. It's the pre-prep of the two-week flow into...
Yeah, so I have a question for you. You can put it in the chat. To guarantee one new hire a week, you need a hire that sticks, I'm assuming. And so for that, how many are you actually offering? Yes, okay. So how many offers do you make to get one new hire to stick? Just for everybody here.
We're playing a numbers game right now.
Yeah. Well, while she thinks, we can go on to the next question.
Yeah.
Realistically, for every three hires, one sticks.
Which is about average.
We were saying you would need three or four offers for one good hire. And so I just wanted to make sure that was kind of still consistent. Still, it's a roller coaster. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Was still consistent to what we saw trending. So I would say for every three or for one great hire, three or four offers.
Yeah. Now I will say this though, is because I'm all about numbers and percentages, conversions, and I love bridging the gap between numbers and people, is 30% is about on point. This is when you have things that are good, they're locked in. But what great looks like is about 50%. What excellent looks like is about 80%. And so there is a potential to get ramped up to getting 80% of the people to stick if things are really locked in, really running right. And I at least want to make that plug because this is the people at the build room that we're having in Chicago. This is all about getting those conversion numbers up and finding out how to maximize the revenue potential on being able to soak in that new money and keep it.
Yeah, I'm going to be teaching on the keys to success. You have to be, guys, we have to become the leader that attracts the people we want. We can't just be throwing up stuff and expect to attract the people we want to keep and to attract and keep. How do you become the leader? I think right now it's 13 key characteristics and elements that start from your mind. They come from your heart and your mind and their skills that are practiced. But this is you and your leadership team, because that is how you not just keep people that you fit, it's how you attract them. If you're attracting not great quality people, we need to do some self-reflection on what kind of leader are we? Who are we attracting? And if we're saying, well, everybody's crap and it's I'm very big on manifestation. On if that's what you are saying, then that's what you're attracting. If that's what we're thinking, that's what we're attracting. But it's the key elements to become a successful leader that is actually a framework that you practice over and over and over. And then you expect your office team to actually execute that way as well. I'm super excited for this framework. because it's tangible. You get to practice it. You get to look at it and you get to know, hey, these are the characteristics that come from our heart. You can't teach that. That has to be there. These are the ones that come from our mind. This is how we think. And then the rest are skills. Then we can train on these skills. And if they don't want to embody these, then they have to find a new team to play on. And this starts from the owner and then goes to your leadership and your management team. And then that's how we attract our technicians and the rest of our team that want to stay and build with us. It can be done. But everybody's, when they talk about hiring, it's here's what I want in a hire. First thing I want to ask you is, well, what are your characteristics as a leader? Can you name them? Do you know what they are? Rico, I'm going to go back to Rico. I got your email, Rico, and I haven't even answered it because I don't know how to answer it yet, because he wrote me this heartfelt email.
I wasn't drunk, I promise.
it was his year anniversary, and it's so beautifully written and in depth. I looked at Chris and I was like, I can't even answer this because I don't know how to answer it. And I'm not even saying I'm a great leader, because I have my faults too. I'm just saying I have a framework that I follow to make sure that I show up consistently and that they have something to then as well, being a leader here, they have a way to show up consistently.
Yeah.
And that's how we continue to attract and, not just attract, but retain great people too. Yep. I can't get rid of anybody. I'm we try. No, we don't try. I'm joking.
Libby, is it okay if I double down on that one as well?
Yeah.
It's the same as what I told Allison here in the chat earlier. If you really need someone, or if you really want someone to stick with you, they need to believe in your vision too as a business owner. That's a critical part, in your business. If you hire someone just for the sake of them being really good at something that you need them to do for you, but they don't believe at all, with your service, with your product, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to work out. So it will all boil down to how you evaluate them. during the interviews, if they believe in your vision, if they believe in, you know, despite the problems that you that they've already encountered with your company, it's important for them to know, or sorry, it's important for you to know if they believe in you and they believe in your vision and in your product. That makes a whole lot more sense than just finding someone who's really good at something, I would say.
And for all the owners out there, your vision has to be large enough that every one of your employees' goals and aspirations fit inside of it. Because if it doesn't, they're not going to see a future with you. They're not going to stay. They're not going to buy in. I just remade the Organize It career ladder. And it is a true career ladder with the potential now to own your own location. I am so excited. That is why I franchised Organize It. We didn't have a career ladder for our technicians, and people, like, the culture has changed. Like, COVID has changed. People send their kids to school to, like, you know, Austin just graduated, go to college and do something. The trades aren't really looked at that respect, like, they're not respected that way.
Yeah.
And so now we're attracting people who want to own a cleaning company, want to be an organizer. You have to come and work for us. And, you know, you have to serve that time. But if you're current, like my ops manager, she wants to open a location now. I'm like, yes. Because that's the true ownership, right? And so they believe in that vision now and they're buying in. And, you know, what does that look like long-term? I don't know. You know, and I know everyone's going to ask me, are you going to hire people who want to own their own cleaning company? Actually, yeah, we are, because that is our long-term vision of the career ladder at Organize It, or people who want to be professional organizers. And that's changed completely the way we used to operate. But for retention and growth, we thought that that was where we needed to go. And now they all, you know, they're buying into the vision. And I'll share my new career ladder, if you guys are interested, in the One Layer Deep Facebook group, of how it goes from, you know, a trainee to a technician. And then how do they get into the franchise location opportunity, or to be a candidate to open their own location, then to the franchise?
Yeah.
Well, I have to go, but Chris is going to stay on and answer a couple more questions we have teed up. I have to go. I have to actually go to a networking event for Organize It. So it's been a long time since I've networked, but when you open a location, you got to do things that you don't want to do.
Cool. All right. So now she's off the mic. I got this dog here. So my puppy co-pilot, we had another question. Tiffany. Okay. So you had said, can we move my login from current email to a different email? You're talking about Leia. So yes, we're going to get that ability to be able to switch over to a different email. So we'll go ahead and let you know when we can get that locked in. But I'm looking over here and we had another question that was, how do you get employees to actually follow the SOPs? Which is a pretty loaded question. And so give me 1 second here. I need to stop this pin. And so it was, again, how do you get employees to actually follow the SOPs? Because right now, I think what a lot of people are doing is they have these processes, which are just kind of there, or you create it once and you try to get it out to your team and maybe they follow it for a week, but then that's it. It just falls off. No, for those employees, I think when we went and we did the work inside of the operations build room earlier this year. And, you know, a lot of what we deal with is the employees, you know, they don't want to have to deal with reading these major SOPs anymore. I think the best way to relate it is that you got to think about where they are in their life. Like, where are they working? Where are they living? So, you know, they're dealing with reactive and a reactive environment and not proactive. And so for them, it's all about, what do I need right now in this moment? They don't want the SOPs. They don't want a document inside of Google Drive. But really the way that we said at the end, I'm going to go ahead and switch my screen over here. At the end of the build room, at the end of that event, is we locked in the idea of the concept of beating drums and baking cookies. I know it sounds silly, but I wanted to break this down in a way that I'm a musician. And so when I say beating drums and baking cookies, the way to get the employees to actually lock in and follow the systems and be able to adopt that over time is, number one, is creating a consistent flow, a consistent rhythm of repeating the same thing over and over again. Because they say that typically it takes about 27 days for somebody to build a habit. And so in order to build a habit, though, you have to repeat it over and over and over again. And so when you're looking to get your employees or get your team to actually do something or have a rhythm to make it happen, you got to put it in front of them. And so we talk about that with with number one is your calendar. Is obsess over your calendar and find ways to get it in front of them, or at least get it in front of your team to then do that. So I know that Darlene's on here and Carrie as well. And I think one of the first few things that we did was when we were working through this practice of, you know, rhythms is, you know, to create those time blocks in your calendar, even if it's not for you personally, but put together time blocks on your calendar and set them as recurring events. And so, you know, typically we talk about this maybe like every Friday. If you really want adoption, if you really want your employees to really get the hint or get the idea of something you want to introduce, or maybe a different way of doing things, is create that calendar event for you or somebody in your office, just as a reminder alone, to then drop into your all staff, to drop into whatever channel you have to talk to all your employees and bake those cookies. Give them something they want to look at. Give them something they enjoy, or maybe like a positive spin. And so in this case, Fridays, you might have like what we do here and what Libby does is a TGIF dispatch. It's the Friday dispatch of kind of a breakdown video of, you know, what's been going on lately, a bit of a teaser of what's coming up, but it's all more spun on a positive attitude. But what we can also do in that moment is also give a more generalized direction on something that's important for the entire company. So if there's a common issue or common trend happening, being able to kind of give that reminder, or let's just say that you have a micro play on something, you can go ahead and drop that link in or share it inside of your all staff and say, hey, by the way, just wanted to give everybody a reminder that we're no longer providing X to customers. What we're going to be doing instead, so let's just say we're no longer accepting cash from the clients. What we're doing instead is we're sending out emails or reminders, and we're letting them know that we'll be doing card only. And so go ahead and remind them about that. So these are examples of being able to drop it or share it on a regular basis, like every week, for instance, to drop in or seed in certain reminders or updates to your team to get it in front of them. Another thing as well is, like, if you have a CRM right now, and there is something that keeps getting missed or keep getting dropped with the service, is think about the rhythms. Think about, you know, beating the drum is the repeated motion of what they're doing, is get it in front of them, make it a trigger. There's things that they have to do. So if they have to clock in, or if they have to do something with their CRM, let's say to punch into a job, there's typically a way to add notes or add something to pop up to say, before you start this job, this is what I want you to focus on. And so maybe this is a seasonal reminder for the technicians, and maybe you have it pop up during the summertime to say, make sure when you're done with the job, reset the thermostat to whatever it was at before you came. And so if you find that you're having certain issues like this, is find a way to, like I said, beat drums, get it in front of them in a repeated fashion, and bake those cookies when you can to make sure that they get what they want without it being too negative or too much down their throat. So we say chocolate broccoli. Yeah, so I'm following up here on some of the chats. So Tiffany said, we do weekly quick reminders from our micro plays. It's been extremely helpful. Same day, same time each week. So you got that rhythm locked in. Nicole said, we do a Friday meeting for 90 minutes. And each person brings certain stats for the week and a 411, what's going on with clients, staff, company, and the list, some problems or issues we're currently upcoming. So we keep them as fast as we can. 1 minute, no longer, I like that. So the micro play is less than 2 minutes. Just get it to them, only what they need, and get out. After that, we use 30 minutes for remaining meeting, problem solve, make sure solutions plans the issue we threw out to the issues we threw out. Okay, so kind of giving that what I need is. Following week, we show how issues were resolved or what we created to streamline it, better check-in processes, how it's working, or if it's something that needed more time to check in on status. So I really like that, Nicole. This is where you start to get the proof of concept, the proof of the pudding. Instead of it just being words on a paper or words in a meeting, the fact that you're able to deliver it, this is the whole baking cookies, is the fact that you're able to deliver it and always follow through, will be huge, because if you can consistently follow through with questions that are raised or questions that are brought up, and I know Rico can attest to this too, is that it gives your team more buy-in when you ask them to speak up about difficult situations or things that are typically uncomfortable from an employer-employee standpoint, because 95% of employees are coming from other jobs or other bosses where if they spoke up about anything, they'd get fired. And so the idea of, like Nicole said, is to follow through on anything that's ever raised. The faster you can do it, the better, as long as it's justified. That alone will give you the buy-in and start to create that adoption, get that culture built for people actually wanting to help the company speak out and contribute. Rico, I see you're unmuted.
Oh, no, yeah. I was just agreeing. And at the same time, when you build rhythms for setting expectations or setting goals for the entire team, probably one out of five people would feel motivated to contribute more during those meetings. And probably another one out of five or one out of 10 people would feel pressured because they aren't doing something at the same level as that person or as that team is equally doing. It might raise a concern out of it and say, hey, I feel embarrassed. That's an open opportunity for you as a business owner, even as a leader, to identify what they're missing out or what they can do for you.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And this is also a huge reason why we have, and I think we have it in the book. If we don't have it in the book, it's inside of the bonus section, but the no DM culture. This is something that we aggressively follow as one of our core principles of how we operate. We actually have a document called How We Operate with about 13 specific sections. And one of those is the no DM policy. This is where we do not, under any circumstances, direct message anything aside from very personal issues in our company. Because if we do, or if someone does, then it starts to create silos. It starts to create tribal knowledge. And what that does is it creates rework. It creates having to say the same thing twice and nobody else is in the loop. And all of a sudden, that's where you start to leak. Again, with operational expenses, COGS, you start to get more expensive with your overhead. And I attribute 80% of this to the DMs and tribal knowledge and not having that full visibility across your team. One thing with that as well is, like with Rico mentioned, is when somebody does DM, because this is a new thing. Every single time we get somebody new into the company, first comes the DMs. But what happens is that we keep pushing the rhythm. We keep saying, hey, tell you what, because we have a no DM policy here, and this is not a personal issue, what I'm gonna ask you is do me a favor, literally copy and paste this and post it back into, I'll even give them the direct link and say at whatever channel, click here, comment in, and then I'll go ahead and comment in inside of there and answer you. And I'll explain to them why. I'll say the reason is because we want to make sure that everything that we have is fully transparent and everybody's on the same page and we can run faster together. Sound good? They'll say yes. They feel a little bit dumb at first and they're like, crap. But because it's a very, very subtle, a non-issue, they're okay with doing it and they can swallow their pride because it's a very small ask. And then they do it and we reinforce it, we answer it and supportive. Hey, that's a great question. Let me go ahead and drop it in. Give me 2 minutes and I'll plug that in for you. And then we feed them the answer, bake the cookies. And all of a sudden they're like, okay, I'm starting to get it. And then the next time they DM, hey, go ahead and comment in this channel. I'll answer you right now. Boom, done. All of a sudden you've eliminated that DM culture entirely. But what you also see is the people around you is also see what's happening is that they're asking open questions. Sometimes they're difficult conversations. And sometimes you can actually see the thought of saying, do me a favor and ask this very personal question. I won't get mad at you, but I'll go ahead and answer you. And then they'll go ahead and answer it openly. And then like what Rico mentioned is we do this practice with the VSs. And I see there's a few in here as well. I see Janice on here.
Yeah.
But we encourage them to talk openly, even if it's a difficult, if they feel dumb, say, look, you're good, but comment in the channel. We'll go ahead and answer it. And then mostly what happens is that the GIFs start popping in and it just becomes this feel-good moment. And so they're okay with reaching out openly about the issues. And now all of a sudden we're on the same page. Everything is fully transparent. And now the added benefit is we can also scrape every bit of that we're working on it right now to get it released to everybody is with Leia, we can actually scrape and give you those reports, give you those breakdowns of what's happening in the chats because the chats are where the battles are. That's where the battles are happening.
Yeah, and subconsciously, I would say as an employee, kind of just been welcomed into the team. They won't actually know what to really do with that OGM policy that we have. Just like what Chris mentioned, we always redirect them to our group chat as for VSs. It's a way for our VSs or for newly hired employees to kind of imbibe that transparency and visibility as well, because they won't be, well, we're working remotely here, they won't be as much visible as they should be if they just continue doing, you know, these DMs or sending DMs to separate people. You want to make sure that when, or we want to make sure here in our VS community that whenever they have any questions, like what I always say to most of our VSs, no matter how you think the question is stupid or very simple to answer, you'll never know, because someone might be asking the same question, but they're too, you know, they're too shy or they're too hesitant to ask it as well. Over time, it grew into this solid community, I would say. And hopefully, since I have my VSS here as well, that it's been a very nice experience and exposure, I would per se, for sharing, you know, what we know, whether it be within the realms of what they're doing with their clients or within another field, you know, that doesn't necessarily involve their day-to-day work. It's a mixture of both experience and culture growth, I would say, is what we're doing.
Nice. Yeah. I want to comment on something Nicole asked. For those, again, the group chats, as long as you're not doing DMs in whatever you use. So if you use, I don't think with WhatsApp, especially if you're not using the business version, you can't pull or extract conversations or threads. So I just want to say, I'm sorry. But Slack, Google Chat, and I haven't tested Discord, but I'm pretty sure you can pull or download the chat history if you're using the paid version. But you can go ahead and Nicole, back to you. You said, are you sending them to a chat group within Leia? This is where the open chat is taking place. So right now we're using Google Chat. We're actually about to roll out some things in Leia, that has a little bit more of a chat flow, chat function, but that's a little bit ways out there. But if you can pull, if you can download those conversations that are happening, and we say this is schedule an end of week, event, again, that rhythm on your calendar to say, download all conversations throughout the entire week from Google Chat or from whatever, or even just one channel of your company, download it wherever everything's happening. And then you can go ahead and plug that into Leia and paste in the transcript and say, hey, can you break down what my fixed first fires are? Tell me what I should fix first, the top three issues I should work on. And then at least that way you have this front-loaded things of the biggest ROIs for your company are now in front of you to say, if I did these three things and nothing else, I would get better ROI out of my team, out of whatever it is, and fill those gaps. I can build a micro play from it. I can create a rhythm. I could fire somebody. But it's all about getting that information out in front of you. But everything is there. It's just a matter of, are we using it? And the same thing as well, Nicole, is being able to download, again, we talked about this before at the customer event in Pennsylvania. The same thing with your call transcripts for sales is if you feel like that's a friction point, download your transcripts from recent calls, and then you can use the sell it agent inside of Leia to then paste in the transcripts and say, hey, tell me what's wrong. Break down what we need to do. There's four different roles. There's four different modes you can go through. But you can start to audit. Number one is what's going on in my day-to-day. And secondly, what's going on with sales and how do I fix these? So it's just a matter of, do we have a rhythm in place to remind us to do these things to help us get that operational efficiency in our company? Yeah, and that's a great point, JP. When doing Google Meets, because we do Google Meets, you can generate the transcript from it. And from there, you can figure out what went on in the meetings. So that's huge for us is, we record every single meeting, hands down, regardless. Now Google actually allows you to, in your settings, you can actually automatically turn on transcriptions so you never forget. Video, you have to turn on yourself to record, but it will automatically record the transcripts on every single call for us so we don't forget to turn it on. But yeah, that was great, great mention there, Nicole. I love that. So let's go ahead. We're right on the hour. We'll go ahead and wrap up here. Really, really love it. Had some great questions. Again, if you're looking to join us here for the People Build Room, it's going to be August 14th and 15th in Chicago. We got some really, really interesting speakers, Ricky Regalado, Matt Green with Blue Duck Lawn Care, who actually just bought a limo. And he's going to be talking through really an interesting positioning on how to get your brand out there. He's got near zero attrition with his employees, which is really cool. And so if you're looking to save money on onboarding, on getting new people in the door, these are some people to look at joining on our call. And so for those OS1 members, make sure that you sign up so we get that seat reserved for you and up to two team members. But yeah, really appreciate it, guys. And we'll see you guys next week.
Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WootRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.